It is another week. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center. Thank you so much for tuning in. You can listen live, Joy 620, of course, every Tuesday afternoon at 5, or you can find the show in podcast form at investinghope.com. You can find it at Google Play app or iTunes, wherever podcasts are found. You can also just go to the website, investinghope.com, to learn all that you need to know about Hope Resource Center, read our blog, listen to this show. Learn how you can volunteer, click the big blue donate button, all of those things you can do right there at investinghope.com. Today, I don't know about you, but I am excited about cold weather. And so I put my outfit on today. I feel weird as a grown man saying outfit, but I put my outfit on today and I realized that I'm dressing just like I want to dress when I'm 70 years old. I have a cardigan on, I have a tie on, very, very festive. And so I'm ready. I know it's going to be cold this week and excited for that. Today, we're going to talk about a couple of things. We're actually going to talk about someone in Pennsylvania, a legislator in Pennsylvania who said something that just really got under my skin. So I had to do what I do when things get under my skin. I wrote about it. And then we're going to look at there was something published in a medical journal attacking pregnancy centers. So a lot of times you'll hear folks talk about pregnancy centers and they'll say that we're just these little mom and pop shops that aren't making a difference. But yet the abortion industry constantly attacks and goes after the pregnancy center movement. And so today what I want to do is talk about a couple of those things, and then we'll get to some things that are coming up for Hope in the coming months. But I'll start with something that happened out of Pennsylvania. So just last week, we had a legislator in Pennsylvania talking about a bill that was going to protect the bodies of babies after abortion. And so there's a bill that was being discussed, and all it was going to do was protect babies after they were aborted to, for a lack of a better word, dispose of the bodies in a humane, dignified way. And so what we found was a legislator there in Pennsylvania had a problem with that. You'll see in a second why I have a problem with what she had to say. So I wrote something I want you to hear. So recently, a Pennsylvania lawmaker, while discussing a bill designed to protect the bodies of babies after an abortion is performed, described a miscarriage as a, and I quote, mess on a napkin. Democratic Representative Wendy Ullman made this crass comment in the month of October, which is traditionally known as Pregnancy and Infant Loss Awareness Month. These comments are reprehensible and should be called out as such. The lack of empathy from an elected official to her constituency is maddening. This isn't a debate on pro-life or pro-choice. Instead, this is simply dealing with common decency. Regardless of where one falls on the issue of abortion, I think we all should be able to manage a thread of remorse for those facing a miscarriage. Hearing these statements took me back to January of 2012. My wife and I had recently found out that we were expecting our second child. We were so excited to know that our family would be adding a new member. That January, I was sitting at my desk when I received a call from my wife. She had gone in for some cramping and was alerted by our doctor that she was having a miscarriage. I won't go into details, but I will say that our mourning and our tears and our heartache wasn't over some mess on a napkin. We cried for our child as we wept with family and friends. To label our despair as some mess on a napkin is wrongheaded and offensive, that I struggle to even find the words to illustrate my disdain. There are families, I'm sure, in Representative Ullman's district that have struggled through pregnancy and miscarriage. There are families that would give anything to see a positive line on a pregnancy test. Many of those same families have watched that positive line fade as the news of a miscarriage shocked their system. I'm a firm believer of the First Amendment, and part of me is glad that this representative gave her honest opinion, because I believe that she isn't alone in this thought. This crass and wrong-headed comment sums up the anti-life movement in a perfect way. They do not see life as a gift to be cherished or even mourned. They see life as a dispensable blob that, if ended in the womb, can be tossed away as a mere mess on a napkin. My life was changed forever in January of 2012. I didn't lose a blob of tissue that day. No, we lost the child. A child that was never created before and will never be created again. Our third, fourth, and fifth pregnancy didn't replace our second. Sure, our family is made up of four amazing children today, but we were blessed with five children. We just didn't get to hold one of them in our arms. I had a lot of anger toward Representative Ullman when I first saw her comments. That anger today has turned to sadness. Sadness for the thousands of parents out there today that will read her comments and immediately think back to the loss of their child. A child, mind you, that was uniquely and wonderfully made for their family. I will not allow this elected official to tarnish the memory of my child and the thousands of children that saw their life end in the womb. Reducing humanity, my child, down to a mess on a napkin is shockingly ignorant, but ever so revealing as we continue to see the veil pulled away on the ultimate anti-life agenda. An agenda, mind you, that is losing ground in every single category. Think about that person today that has been affected by miscarriage. Give them a call, send them a note, or say a prayer for them. Many of us don't open up about our loss for one reason or another, but please know that the loss never goes away. That loss is always here, and stories like today will only bring it back to the front of our mind. Your prayer, calls, and notes will be appreciated as we seek a day where humanity is given the dignity it deserves. And so that's where the abortion industry, that's where the anti-life narrative is going. It's to be able to sit on a panel when everyone is watching and you're an elected official and you're talking about disposing of the bodies of babies that have been aborted, and to somehow shift to discuss miscarriage. Miscarriages, mind you, that are not choices. These aren't, my wife and I didn't sit down and say, you know what? I think it's time we have a miscarriage. And to describe that as a mess on a napkin. And you can go find the clip, just Google it. She even paused. And you know why she paused before she said it? She paused because she knew this is going to upset some folks. And even though she paused and thought in her mind, maybe I shouldn't say what I'm about to say, she said it anyway. And her description of a miscarriage as a mess on a napkin. You see, this is where we are as a society. That there's a segment of our population that refuse to recognize life is life. You know, and I'll admit, when we had our miscarriage, the doctor we were seeing at the time was very much, I think, inappropriate. And, you know, and they say things like, well, statistics show that 1 in 3, 1 in 4 women have miscarriages. So this is normal. This is normal. You shouldn't be concerned about it. Is that something to tell someone that just lost a child? That we were preparing in our minds for a new child. Thinking of what their room would look like. Would it be a boy? Would it be a girl? What the name would be. Couldn't wait to tell our parents. So instead, what I had to do was call my mom. And not only tell her that we were pregnant, but then immediately tell her we had a miscarriage. So the same conversation, I told my mom that we were expecting a new child, I told her that her grandchild also died. See, it's not a mess on a napkin. But we have taken the abortion and life discussion, and we have made it into simply an issue. And so, see, when you see this as simply an issue, when you see this as an issue, then you forget that it deals with actual people. You forget that it deals with humanity. And I don't care, even if you're not a Christian, and you don't agree with me that everyone bears the image of our God, even if you disagree with that aspect of what I'm saying, what we can all agree is in humanity. That we're nice to our neighbors, we're nice to those we come in contact with. I mean, I can think of my worst enemy, and I don't think they would have called our miscarriage a mess on a napkin. But when you turn this into just an issue, just another issue, when we find ourselves there, then we neglect the fact that we are dealing with humans. And so then you allow yourself to say, this is just a mess on a napkin. Oh, your miscarriage is just a statistic. One in three, it happens to one in three people, so you shouldn't get too worked up over it. And so if you ever wonder why people don't talk about their miscarriages, that's why. Every time I've ever spoken about the issue, about miscarriage, and told our story and what we went through, every single time people come up to me and say, we had one, and we didn't know how to tell anybody because people act like we didn't lose a child. People act like we didn't lose a life. You know, and what I wrote was posted at Pregnancy Help News, and March for Life shared it. And I'm going through and reading the comments of people that have read this, and just comment after comment is people talking about the lives that they've lost via miscarriage over the years. So instead of being wrongheaded and crass and calling a mess on a napkin, maybe, just maybe, we should look at our neighbor and say, how can we be there for you during that time? Because I'll tell you, when we went through it, the very day that we found out about it, it just happened to be on a Wednesday night. We were headed to church, and we told the group that we were in the room with, and we felt love and prayer. And we couldn't have got through that without a support system. And so if you're listening today, and that's you, and you haven't been able to express yourself or tell someone about it, I would encourage you to reach out to somebody. If you know of somebody that's dealt with a miscarriage, reach out to them. Send them a note. Just say, hey, thinking about you. It will go a long way. We'll be back in a sec. Say I'm fine, yeah, I'm fine, oh, I'm fine, hey, I'm fine, but I'm not. I'm broken, and when it's out of control, I say it's under control, but it's not, and you know it. I don't know why it's so hard to. So as we continue the conversation, hopefully the first segment you were able to understand what's going on in the larger narrative, and in this segment will kind of point us to what else is going on as medical providers across the country are targeting pregnancy centers. And so the reason that I bring these things up is because I want our supporters to understand what we're dealing with. We have less funds than the abortion industry. We get less time on media outlets than the abortion industry. We're constantly in the courts if something comes up. And now we have medical professionals writing and submitting things to go into medical journals directly attacking pregnancy centers. And so there's an article over at rewire.news that talks about this that I wanted to read to you. And then as I read it, I'll kind of break down some things and we'll have a discussion on it based on that. And so here it goes. It says, crisis pregnancy centers pose a unique threat. Listen to that. How many heartbeats have been ended inside of a pregnancy center? The answer is zero. Zero. But we pose a unique threat in states like Ohio, where they outnumber abortion providers. Abby McElroy was age 15 when a guest speaker in her high school sex education class told her and her classmates that they should think of themselves as tape. The speaker walked around the classroom demonstrating that the more you stick and then peel tape off of different surfaces, the more it loses its stickiness. Then she quotes, they told us that we were the tape, McElroy told the news, and every time we slept with someone or had sex with them, we were giving them our stickiness, and we can never get that back. Okay, first off, yes, that's a terrible illustration, and they shouldn't be using it. But that's not a threat to society. The guest speakers who visited McElroy's class that day were from Amnion Pregnancy Center, a crisis pregnancy center in Drexel Hill, Pennsylvania. And then they go further. Rewire.news says this, crisis pregnancy centers are anti-choice clinics that sometimes pose to healthcare providers but are unregulated and often provide false, misleading information meant to dissuade pregnant people from getting abortions. Okay, first off, we are not posing as health clinics. Hope Resource Center is, in fact, a health clinic. We have four nurses on staff. We have five nurses on staff, three nurse practitioners on staff. We have a medical executive committee made up of physicians and OBs. So we are a medical clinic. And yes, we do have conversations with people about the choices in front of them. We talk about abortion. We do not provide abortion. We tell them why we do not provide abortion. And then we offer support for those that choose life. And we offer support for those that don't choose life. We offer support for whoever walks in our doors. That's the fact. And then they go further in this article. On Monday, two prominent medical organizations, the Society for Adolescent Health and Medicine and the North American Society for Pediatric and Adolescent Gynecology, published a joint position paper that describes how crisis pregnancy centers can harm young people, including through sex education programs. Now, you know what we did last Thursday? We provided at Hope Resource Center 22 baby showers for young women. How harmful is that? I guess pretty harmful, pretty terrible that we decided to do that. The article goes further. The paper published in the Journal of Adolescent Health and Journal of Pediatric and Adolescent Gynecology includes recommendation for governments, which often provide funding to CPCs as well as for school boards and districts, which invite CPCs into sex ed classrooms across the country. Quote, it can be difficult to distinguish between a crisis pregnancy center and healthcare clinics and provide safe, comprehensive care, especially online. Dr. Maria Trent, president of that organization, said in a press release, health professionals should help young people recognize that crisis pregnancy centers and the limitation of CPC services and facilitate access to quality, unbiased sources of information, care, and resources. I think it's funny that they are arguing here that the abortion industry is unbiased, but the pregnancy health movement, the pregnancy center movement, they are saying is biased. Look, the reality is the crisis pregnancy center the movement is against abortion. We're not hiding that fact. And so guilty as charged that I would prefer life be saved and babies be born than lives be ended and babies not be born. But the reality is, if you're going to call pregnancy centers biased, then you have to look at the abortion industry that's making billions of dollars off the backs of these women having abortions. You have to look at them and say, yeah, they're biased too. They're biased too. In addition to the, back to the article, in addition to the tape analogy, McElroy said the speakers warned students about what they called the steep slope of arousal and the side effects of sex, which they said included STDs, unplanned pregnancy, and emotional baggage. She says that speakers also gave students false information about oxytocin, sometimes known as the love hormone because it released when humans bond with each other. They told us that humans have limited amount, and they told us that if we had many romantic partners and showed them physical affection, we would use up the amount that we had, and especially if we had sex with them. And then we would find our forever partner. We won't be able to show them the true complete love we would have if we stayed abstinent. End quote. McElroy says she came out of the class scared about how she would form a bond with someone or have a healthy relationship in the future. But that after a summer of research on pregnancy centers, she realized that much, if not all, of the information she learned in the health class was misleading or false. I would love to see where that research was done from this 15-year-old. On pregnancy centers. Because, yeah, if you Google pregnancy centers, you're going to come across a lot of articles attacking pregnancy centers. And I guess it's a bad thing to speak about abstinence and waiting till you're married. I guess that's a bad thing to teach nowadays, but that's what I'm going to be teaching in the Woodhouse. That's what was taught to me. That's what was taught to my wife. The article continues. In their paper, opposed the faith-based abstinence-only until-marriage programs, crisis pregnancy centers employ because they don't provide accurate information about contraceptives and condoms, often focusing exclusively on failure rates and side effects. Additionally, evidence shows that abstinence programs, quote, are not effective at delaying sexual activity and reducing sexual risk behavior. It may even cause harm. Evidence suggests, quote, young people who take virginity pledges are less likely to use condoms and contraceptives at first intercourse and have higher rates of higher rates of STDs and pregnancies, according to the paper. Despite the mountains of evidence that show how ineffective and often misleading abstinence-only programs are, only 17 states require that sex ed be medically accurate, according to the Guttmacher Institute, a research and policy organization that is a pro-abortion organization. Of course, they don't list that, but that is who they are. Some states also have dangerous laws on the books. And here's what they're calling dangerous laws on the books. Any law that would restrict abortion, that's what they consider dangerous law. Anybody that would seek to teach abstinence is dangerous, is a threat to their cities and to our country. That's where we are. The crisis pregnancy centers are able to open more clinics and reach more young people in part because of the funding they receive from the federal and state governments. Did you hear that? Seriously. You could take every pregnancy center in this country. 3,000 pregnancy centers in this country. You could combine all of our budgets. All of our budgets combined together. And you would not equal the amount of money Planned Parenthood receives from the federal government. $500 million is what Planned Parenthood receives from the federal government. Take every single pregnancy center in this country, add up our budgets, and you're not even equaling that. And the vast majority of us receive absolutely $0 from the federal or state government. Now that could change in the near future, but I can promise you it's not going to be as much as the abortion industry. And so Planned Parenthood receives $500 million a year as an organization. And they do a third of the abortions in this country. So I'm not even adding up the other abortion clinics. But the fact that they were able to write that sentence, that crisis pregnancy centers are able to open more clinics and reach more young people in part because of the funding they receive from federal and state governments, that is so laughable. So laughable. And they just wrote it like it was true. As a result, these groups encourage governments to only support programs that provide adolescents and young adults experiencing or at risk for unplanned pregnancy with medically accurate, unbiased, and complete health information. You see, what this means is they want to go into our schools. They don't want to just teach sex ed. They want to Many of these courses actually teach kids how to make sex fun, how to make it 2019. You see, it's not just about preventing pregnancy. It's not just about safe sex. It's about do whatever makes you happy. Do whatever makes you feel good. Embrace it. Embrace who you are and all that comes with that. They go further in this article. They noted that the Trump administration tried to end the teen pregnancy prevention program and instead give $277 million to abstinence-only programs, though a federal judge blocked the effort. The Trump administration also awarded $1.7 million of Title X federal family planning grants to Obria Group, a network of crisis pregnancy centers, in 2019. Yeah, the reality is, the administration looked at Planned Parenthood and said, look, if you will just separate yourself from abortion, you can keep receiving these funds. And what did Planned Parenthood say? Well, no, we're not going to separate ourselves from abortion. And then the government said, well, then you're not going to get this money. Imagine that. You get government funding and you have to jump through hoops. That's the reality. We'll continue to this conversation when we come back. In the valley, I will lift my eyes to the one who sees me there. When I'm standing on the mountain, I didn't get there on my own. When I'm walking through the valley, I know I am not alone. You're God of the hills and valleys. Hills. As we continue the conversation, I want to continue this article that I referenced in the last segment over at rewire.news. Not encouraging you to read much over there, but I do think it's important that we read what's being said about the pregnancy centers from folks that really don't know much about pregnancy centers. So Gabriel Mann, as the article continues, communications manager at NARAL Pro-Choice Ohio, which NARAL is one of the worst, most extreme abortion organizations in this country, very much pro-abortion, told Rewire.news that crisis pregnancy centers in the state are funded through the sale of, quote, Choose Life license plates. And let's stop for there just for a second. You know, when you get behind somebody's car and they have the license plate and it's got a baby on it, it says Choose Life. You've seen those license plates. Okay, it's a specialty license plate. If you want that one, you have to pay a little bit extra. And then what happens is the Right to Life will take that money and they will distribute that money to pregnancy centers. So NARAL is saying that these organizations are funded through these license plates, and there must be millions of dollars. I mean, you read this and you think, wow, they must be making millions of dollars off these license plates. Hope Resource Center got a check last year for about $1,000 because of these license plates. So arguing that we're funded through the sale of these license plates acts as if the majority of our budget is taken care of by these license plates. We're grateful. We're certainly grateful for these license plates, but let's not make it out like we're getting millions of dollars because of these license plates. And the article goes further. But they're also largely funded through the state's budget. Currently, in the state of Tennessee, Hope Resource Center here in Knoxville receive $0 from the state. Now, again, that could change in the near future as money is allocated and moved away from abortion organizations. But as of right now, we receive no money from the state. Now, in Ohio, the 2019 budget earmarked $7.5 million in taxpayer dollars to fund Ohio crisis pregnancy centers for the next 2 years. Now, they're completely fine with money being allocated to the abortion industry, tax dollars being allocated to the abortion industry. But for some reason, they're upset when tax dollars are allocated to pregnancy centers. Look, the reality is, if you are in a state, and that state is blue, and that state is pro-choice, there's a really good chance funds are going to go from the state to the abortion industry. Now, if you have elections, and those elections go a different direction, and that blue turns to red, and now you have a pro-life state, so let's say you have a pro-life legislature and a pro-life governor, they may look at that and go, you know what? We need to move some of those funds to pregnancy centers, to pro-life organizations. That's how it's played. That is politics. So they're writing this and getting upset that some funds are going to pregnancy centers. Again, not a large amount of funds, but a little bit. I don't see these articles in Rewire.news about Planned Parenthood receiving $500 million a year from the federal government, not to mention the money they're receiving from states. But let's attack the state of Ohio for setting aside $7.5 million in taxpayer dollars to fund pregnancy centers in Ohio. They go further. Mann noted that CPCs pose a unique threat in states like Ohio. A unique threat. What? If you can't tell, I get frustrated about this because pregnancy centers are the most loving, passive, nice places you could ever go. There is absolutely no threat. No threat whatsoever. Every day we come in and we pray for the patients that are going to walk through that doors, those that are on schedule, those that may walk in. Every night we go to bed thinking about our patients. Every morning we wake up thinking about our patients. I spoke at a church this past Sunday talking about our patients and the work that we do. I spoke at a banquet last week in Dixon talking about the work that is done at the pregnancy center. There's no threat. There's no unique threat that is being posed by pregnancy centers. No heartbeats are being ended inside of the walls of pregnancy centers. No lives are being ended inside the walls of pregnancy centers. But since Roe v. Wade, inside of abortion clinics, 60 million heartbeats extinguished. Now, who poses the threat to humanity? A pregnancy center that loves Jesus and wants you to wait to have sex until you're married, or an abortion clinic that's ending lives every single day? The article goes further. Mann noted that crisis pregnancy centers pose a unique threat in states like Ohio, where they outnumber abortion providers and often position their clinics right next door to health clinics that provide abortions. Now listen to that. This would be like Wendy's writing an article and saying, how dare McDonald's put their place right next door to us? They know that we sell burgers too. They know what they're doing. Or Home Depot saying, how dare Lowe's open right next to us? Or a doctor's office saying, how dare that doctor's office open right next to us? Of course pregnancy centers are going to open their doors next to abortion clinics. Of course they are. And I'll let you in on a little secret. We want the abortion clinic to close. And so in 1997, Hope Resource Center opened its doors where? Right next to an abortion clinic. In 2012, guess what happened? That abortion clinic closed its doors. Guess who's still open and serving the women of this city? Hope Resource Center. The article goes on. NARAL Pro-Choice Ohio found in 2013 investigation of crisis pregnancy centers that if someone walks into one of them and says they have an appointment, the staff won't say you're looking for the place next door. Instead, they'll sign you in and take you to a room. Picking the wrong door could mean someone misses an appointment with a real doctor, potentially delaying a procedure long enough to require a surgical abortion instead of a medication abortion, or maybe the entire added level of complication puts the whole procedure out of reach for that person just by putting that fake clinic next door to the real clinic. So abortion clinics, where non-medical professionals are providing ultrasounds, to NARAL, they're real clinics. And my question would be, if someone accidentally walked inside of an abortion clinic and said, I have an appointment today, you think that abortion clinic is saying, oh, I'm sorry, you're supposed to be over at the pregnancy center today? Of course they wouldn't. Of course they wouldn't. This is silliness. It's dishonesty. And it's pushing an agenda. And the whole agenda is to be able to end more lives inside the womb. Think about that. Think about how they're going out of their way to twist the truth and outright lie just so they can end more lives. And the difference is, when I see something done at a pregnancy center that I think is wrong or unethical, guess what? I'm going to call it out. We're willing to look in the mirror and say, this is not how we are going to do things. We have meetings as pregnancy center leaders about doing things the right way and being ethical. But the abortion industry, you have Kermit Gosnell in Philadelphia. You don't have one abortion proponent come out and say that man should be in jail the rest of his life. When you have an abortion doctor that's been hoarding the bodies of babies he aborted in the trunk of his car, you don't have anybody come out and say on the abortion side, that man should have been in jail a long time ago. No, because they're unwilling to look in the mirror and call each other out. But it's frustrating when they point their sights to pregnancy centers. And there's a number of reasons why it's frustrating. One of those, or I guess there's a number of reasons why it's frustrating, but there's also a reason why it brings me hope. Because we are truly not well-funded. Certainly not as well-funded as the abortion industry. But yet our model is working so well, and we got them so shook that they're writing articles for medical journals to attack pregnancy centers. That they're writing a dissertation in this article attacking pregnancy centers. How dare they open up their doors next to us? Why are they upset about that? Because what they know is when patients walk into our office and see the care they receive, they're not going to want to go to the abortion clinic anymore. They know that. And so, see, this article isn't about attacking the pundits. It's not about attacking politicians. It's not about attacking the activist. This isn't even attacking those that pray outside of the abortion clinic. This is attacking the folks that are getting up every single day, putting scrubs on, putting their medical license on the line, on the wall, and saying to these patients, you matter to us. They're attacking the places that are providing all of these services at no cost. We provide every service that Planned Parenthood provides that doesn't offend God. But yet they call us a fake clinic. The only reason they do that, when you get to a place where you're just name calling, you're losing. And you have no argument left. And so now we're just going to start calling them fake clinics and say that they're getting millions of dollars through license plates, even though they really get about $1,000 a year from it. Because if they were honest with themselves and honest with the American people and the public, they would all close up shop, because what they're doing is targeting a population and ending the lives of a generation. We'll be back.
I don't want to spend my life stuck in a pattern, and I don't want to gain this world but lose what matters. And so I'm giving up everything because I want to be different. I want to be different.
So hopefully the last two segments, looking at that article, you can see what we're up against in terms of the pregnancy center movement. But these are positive things. This isn't a conversation that we should be concerned with. It's a conversation we should be hopeful of. Because what this means is they are looking at what's going on in this country. They see the court shifting. They see legislation shifting. But even outside of that, they see pregnancy centers making a difference in our cities, in our towns, and in our communities across this country. Like, it's making a difference. I gave this statistic a few weeks ago. But since Roe v. Wade, we have seen a decrease, a 53% decrease in abortion. Since Roe v. Wade, 53% decrease. In that same amount of time, we've seen an 86% increase in places like Hope Resource Center opening its doors, pro-life organizations opening its doors, an 86% increase. Those numbers certainly are connected. You see, the abortion industry, they don't long for a day where abortion is a thing of the past. They don't long for a day where abortion is only used in life of the mother, incest, and rape. They don't long for a day where we see any restrictions on abortion. They really do not care where science takes us. You see, their ultimate goal is that abortion would always be okay, celebrated, welcomed in this country and around the world. And so what we have to do is continue opening our doors, continue serving, continue loving our image bearers, the image bearers in our city, continue to offer the care and service that they need. We have to, as pregnancy centers, we have to hold ourselves to a higher standard, and we're okay with that. We have to seek out excellence in care and in service. We have to hire the right people. We have to make sure our volunteers are trained appropriately. You see, we don't run from that. We have to be open to have that conversation, be open to articles, be open to talk to reporters, to do these things, because what we want to do is speak into the narrative, a narrative that's been controlled for a long time by the abortion lobby. And so that's really all this is. The articles, the medical journal publications that are being put out there, they're seeking to close the doors of pregnancy centers, not because we're a threat to the people of that city, but because we're a threat to the abortion industry. They don't want us opening our doors next to them because we're a threat to the abortion industry. They don't want us receiving funding from the state or the federal government because we're a threat to the abortion industry, not to the citizens of the cities and the states and the country that we get to call home. So what does that mean? That means that we're winning. That's what that means. That means that a difference is being made. Lives are being saved. People are starting to see the truth. Ultrasound images are starting to show us that life is precious. It is certainly life in the womb. It is not some mess on a napkin. It's not some blob. And so those are the things that we're seeing a difference being made. And we're grateful for it. And we couldn't do any of that without your partnership. And so if you want to partner with us, you can at investinghope.com. You can do that by giving. You can do that by praying. You can do that by volunteering. We just had 22 baby showers. That means we're out of everything. So if you want to donate car seats, pack and plays, diaper bags, diapers, wipes, anything like that, we would welcome your partnership in that. Coming up in December, we have a concert. You can come out to the concert with us. Ready for Rain's going to be performing, and they have some guests that are going to be coming with them. It's going to be at Maker City Church. It's going to be an awesome, awesome evening. We have a lot of things happening. We have an amazing story that we're going to share with you in our year-end piece that you'll be seeing in your mailboxes very soon. Just God is moving in some amazing ways. And in the near future, I'll be letting you know where I'll be in January speaking about the sanctity of life. Going to be visiting with a lot of churches speaking on the issue, and certainly grateful for those opportunities. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for partnering with Hope Resource Center, and we'll talk to you next week.
Could you be different?